Welcome to the 40K Lorecast.
Welcome to the 40K Lorecast with John Barsotti and Brad Chester.
This guy.
On today's episode, we're going to conclude our coverage of the Blood Angels by picking up after the end of Horus Heresy and kind of taking them through just after 999 of M41.
So today, in about an hour or so, we're going to cover 11,000 years.
Yeah, I mean, not a lot happens. So again, the 40K Lorecast is a weekly podcast focusing on the lore of the Warhammer 40K universe, with new episodes releasing every Monday at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. Before we begin, as always, please be sure to follow the show and comment in the cast. It helps our algorithm out a lot and pushes the cast out to a lot more people. Also, I'm just a really competitive person about things that don't matter. So I really like seeing this show ranked above people on Spotify that I don't like. So if you all could do me a favor and like and comment to help move us up the charts, just so I can disappoint people who I don't care for and I want them looking at and saying, what the hell's a Warhammer and why is it more interesting than me? Because you're not interesting and you're a bad person. That's why. Anyway, if you hear who I'm talking about, you can probably guess. If you go to the about of the show, you'll see a number of links, namely to our website, the40klorecast.com, our Discord and our Patreon. Our website, we've really kind of expanded it out. So it now has a lot more information on the cast, our merchandise, information on Brad's coaching, and all of our upcoming 40K events. For those who are listening to this in 2025, we are having a 150-person tournament in Metro Detroit, June 6th through to June 8th.
It's going to be awesome.
It'll be really fun. Speaking of Discord, if you like what we do here and looking to interact more around the lore of 40K, please join our Discord. It's completely free to join, because all Discords should be. It's a spot where you can interact with us and other listeners about the cast, topics we've covered, topics you want us to cover, and all things Brad is wrong about. It comes up a lot. That's some solid shade. More importantly, it's a place to talk about 40K together, hobbying, gameplay, literature advice, video games, memes. There's even like a channel just where you can show off your pet and general chat. As always, massive thanks to Kevin, Macy, Brian, Ethan, Steve, Ryan, Trevor, and David for moderating it. Because without them, it would not exist. I would have 100% deleted it.
And you didn't even say that it was spelled wrong this time.
He knows.
He knows.
It's Kevin that's spelled wrong. He's got a Q in it. Anyway, speaking of still existing, Brad.
Barely.
That's not. It's really just at this point pure will. Your body's like, are we done yet? Like, nope.
Hatred and anger.
Yeah. For those of you who like either want to play the game at the tabletop or online, Brad has coaching services available. Again, 30 years of playing, 10 years of coaching, every army, every level of player Brad has experience with. Brad's a really great resource for anyone who falls into those categories. If you're interested in his services, you can either go to the 40klorecast.com, or if you're a member of our Discord, which again, it's free, so you might as well be, you can contact him there.
It's also fun.
It is fun. All right, back to the cast. So, end of the Horus Heresy, Blood Angels are in rough shape. Primarch's dead, which in a couple hundred years won't make them very special amongst the Loyalist Legions.
But now it's a big deal.
Yeah, right now they're one of only two.
Two.
With
Ferris Manus and that's it.
And Sanguinius, that's it. Fast forward a little bit, it's everyone.
It's all of them.
Yeah, it's all of them. So anyway, they're also devastated in numbers. And this is where, and if you want to go look at, there's tons of Reddit threads about this, about GW math. So at the onset of the Horus Heresy, there were 120,000 Blood Angels. There are now approximately 500 to 1,000 left. I spent a lot of time trying to track this down. And I this is because the numbers just don't make sense to me. They write that at the end of the Siege of Terra, there were 500 surviving members that went back with Sanguinius to Baal.
Yeah, they took his body back to Baal.
Yeah.
And
I'm assuming there wasn't like 10,000 blood angels just hanging out somewhere in the galaxy when the Emperor's life was in danger. It is the blood angels. They would have gone en masse. So it kind of feels like that's it.
Also, remember, they're taking their Primarch back, but they also have to have that awkward driving moment where someone has to go, hey, man, remember the time where all of us blacked out in rage and murdered everyone around us? Like, should we talk about that? Like, I think that's something we should probably talk about.
Yeah, and it's going to come up a lot. This part's a little bit weird. So in Blood Angels lore, there's kind of a gap in time. This is why when I bring up there's not a lot of them left, it feels like they go back to Baal to just basically rebuild the Legion. And that's something a bunch of the Legions did do. They just spent some time post-heresy. Like, it was
Raven Guard, 100%.
Well, yeah, because what you had is the Ultramarines and the Dark Angels arrive with full force. And they're the ones who mostly lead the charge of just let's go wreck all the traitors because they're at full force. You know, the rest of the guys are kind of like, me and my 11 surviving buddies, we're going to do the same thing.
We'll be with you sometime in the future.
So the Blood Angels kind of go back to Baal and to replenish their numbers. It's just a little bit odd. They don't do much for a period of time. But back on Baal, that they focus in on, all right, let's build rebuild legions. And you know what? That's actually a good place. We should probably have, at some point, we need to talk about how you become a Blood Angel. So this is probably a good place to do it. So as we said before, Baal is made up of a planet, which is Baal, then Baal 1 and Baal 2, Baal Secundus and Baal Prime.
I love that you keep calling it Baal 1 and 2.
Yeah, Baal 1, Baal 2. That's what it is.
Their moons are also gigantic.
Yeah, these moons are the size. I mean, this is kind of like how, you know, Baal the planet is not the size of Jupiter, but the moons, okay.
They have Jupiter-sized moons.
I know. I just want to point this out because there are people, we do have physicists in our Discord who will understand this. If Baal 2 is as big as they make it, its gravitational pull would just slam it into Baal. Like, you're like, oh yeah, there's a moon orbiting the planet. The planet's pretty big, but the moon's almost the same size as the planet. Yeah, that ends one way, guys. It's like, this is high school physics. We're not even getting into really anything that involved. It's high school physics. I can't
wait for someone to tell you exactly what would happen.
Oh, there will be someone who'll point out to 100%. Us. Actually, yeah, this is how long that orbit could have lasted, like 11 days. So anyway, as we said before, you have Baal 1, Baal 2. Baal 2 is the more populous of the two.
Hold on. I'm getting my chi together, guys. Because why do multiple Marine chapters let their planets just be a trash fire when they can easily terraform these? We consistently make planets whatever the hell we want them to be in the Imperium. They just leave these places like, hey, man, maybe it's just trashy. Mm. You're like, you could just fix this.
Yeah, Sanguinius and his tribe murdered most all of the mutants on Baal Secundus. And then we're like, oh, yeah, we also could put in greenery and get rid of all the radiation. And they went, meh.
People
there are fine. I mean, it's actually super messed up because not only did they go meh, then they went down to Baal, the main planet, and they built a fortress there. And it is in the codexes; those fortresses have like greenhouses. So they bailed on it and went to the planet, didn't invite any of the people there, but they've got like all the food they could possibly need and just kind of hanging out.
There's tons of people that never leave that moon.
Yeah,
and then.
The vast majority of them.
I can only imagine they go down to do some work on Baal Prime and go, what the shit?
You guys could have just done this on the moon? Yeah, totally. Why?
Yeah.
Well, why didn't you? I didn't get to it yet.
Not really cool. I mean, suck it, Trebek.
Yeah, exactly. It's stuff to do. But anyway, so to become a Blood Angel, they have a special process, like everyone does. And their process is actually really cool. They have something called the Dupless Lunaris, which is when the two moons align in a straight line the whole way through the planet, which, as I was just discussing, I'm pretty sure at that moment they would both slam into the planet and crush it. Anyway, all right. Surprise, surprise. When this happens, the Blood Angels have a giant fight that has to occur in order to get there. So on Baal Prime, aka Baal 1, they just have a bog standard ritual combat that at the end of it, only a few of the aspirants can make it forward. But on Ball 2, Ball Secundus, it's a much bigger event. And I want to point out this is that, so on Ball 1, a bunch of people get together and they fight and the victor gets to be there. Now let me talk about why it sucks to live on Ball 2. On Ball Secundus, you have to reach Angel's Fall. The event occurs in Angel's Fall, which is the spot where Sanguinius was found.
Also, why is this place so jacked still? There's still people killing people on this planet.
Ball Secundus is all nomad tribes still trying to make a living, you know, just finding random stuff to survive off of. Angel's Fall is in the middle of a massively hostile desert. And so when it's time, the Blood Angels fly their Thunderhawks all over Ball Secundus to announce it. I am 100%, by the way, when GW wrote this in their brain, it was like the Thunderhawks flying over, like playing trumpets or something like that. But in my mind, I'm thinking Running Man or Idiocracy, where there's a full video and like you know, you've got like fireworks going off. That's how it should be. Like, you know, let it begin. All right. Or actually, truthfully, it's probably would be what's the Jennifer Lawrence movie?
Hunger Games?
Yeah, it's probably more like that. I've seen one of those.
You still haven't seen Harry Potter. No. What else didn't you watch?
A lot of stuff. No. Avatar was the big one, but everyone in Discord backed me on that one. Everyone's like, yeah, it's a terrible movie. You didn't miss out on anything. I'm like, yeah, no.
Dances with Wolves in Space is fantastic.
Yeah, Dances with Wolves is fantastic. I don't need a bad interpretation of it.
Dances with Wolves needed 9-foot-tall blue aliens.
Yeah, it's objectively a worse film. Anyway, because it makes less sense too. All right, so the aspirants on Ball 2 have to run through this massively inhospitable land to reach the trials. And there's one thing I do that was horribly disappointed in the first time I ever read this was they have something that lives on Ball Secundus called a fire scorpion. And I got super excited that it was a scorpion that would shoot fire. Nope, it's just a big red scorpion. And when it stings you, it turns your blood to acid.
It's acid. I was just about to say, how do you not think that's cool? You're like, hey, can I survive this? You're like,
which one's cooler? A giant? Okay, this is a 12-foot scorpion.
Fine, shooting fire is always cooler.
That's my point. Like, if it gets you with its pincer tail, which I'm assuming is about 2 feet wide, after it runs probably through you and kills you, it turns you're already dead as giant pincers. I'm fighting an 11-foot scorpion.
I'm shaking that off.
Other option, 11-foot scorpion that shoots fire. Way cooler. Just objectively way cooler. But fine. Once they reach Angel's Fall, they then do the same ritual of combat that they're doing on Ball 1 after running through all that crap. And about 50 or so of them will be brought over to Ball.
It is kind of funny because it does seem like the TV show now.
Yeah.
Because they pick up all the people don't die.
Yeah.
They just get scooped up by servitors and everybody else that's.
Yeah, that's the weird thing. It's not combat to the death, whereas a lot of the other legions actually fight to the death. These guys seem to fight with sticks until, like,
that makes wildly more sense, though.
Yeah.
Don't kill your future members.
Yeah, because what if you don't realize, but your number 22 seed's actually really good, and he beats a number one seed? Now you lost number one. Like, come on, you know? Anyway, the ones who win are selected and loaded on Thunderhawks to bring back to the fortress back on Ball. The ones who don't win but survive actually either become serfs for the Space Marines. Some of them stay and guard Angel's Fall, and a bunch just go back to their tribes because, you know, why not?
They get to do it again, though.
Yeah, but until they age out.
Right.
And that's a thing, but whatever. So anyway, whatever it is, they all go back to what's called the Arx Angelicum, the planet of Ball, which is where Sanguinius is buried, and it's the headquarters for the Blood Angels. Once they're there, a cool thing about this is they actually will see a Blood Angel for the first time with their helmet off. And this is a common thing in all the recruiting worlds. Same with the Space Wolves. They never, the Space Wolves might see them with their helmets on, but I think most of the worlds, they never see a Space Marine. They just see them only in their armor. As I said, I'm like, the Space Wolves love not wearing their helmets, which is why they get poisoned all the damn time.
Don't mess with my Space Wolves. How is anybody going to see my sweet tats and cool braids if I wear a helmet?
Yeah, you just, you know, not die to poison. Anyway, the aspirants what's interesting about this is that it's a cool feature of the gene seed that we never talk about. And they talk about in the Blood Angels. All the aspirants are pretty beat up physically. They've been living on a radiated wasteland. They've got a lot. They literally call this out in the codexes that they've got like tumorous growths. They're missing like teeth. They're missing hair. Somebody missing fingers. They're pretty beat up. But the Space Marine Blood Angels are perfect.
Yep.
Which means that, and this makes sense. Sanguinius had some pretty powerful healing powers. It means that once the gene seeds go into them, their bodies actually perfect.
I do love the fact that Marines can die from poison, but they'll make you hot.
Yeah, you'll be super good looking. I mean, it basically is like, it's completely a Disney movie, by the way, which is where, oh, we'll put these into you and you'll turn into Shrek. And I think it was Shrek 2 or the Shrek 3. When he turned into a regular person. It also explains why, I think GW put this in there because someone called out and was like, hey, why does every Space Marine look the same with its helmet off in all the models? And they were like, oh, it's a side effect of the gene seed. That's an answer. Yeah,
you look awesome.
Yeah. So
everybody's giving blue steel.
Yeah. The next piece of this is just messed up. So everyone has their own little way of doing the gene seed process. The Blood Angels situation is called sanguination. In the sanguination, the first thing the Blood Angel aspirant does is they have to drink from a cup that's got the first step of the gene seed process. As soon as they drink from the cup, it should put them into a coma for a year. They go into a coma immediately. The year bit is interesting. They then, and this is early Blood Angel stuff.
This is bananas, dude.
This is just dumb.
They jam them into a sarcophagi and effectively go, can we jam the most tubes into one person?
It makes no sense. Okay, let's just say what it is, and then I'm going to complain. So they shove them in a sarcophagus with a bunch of tubes into them to feed them like oxygen and nutrients while they're doing it. The problem is that, as we covered in the cast, the process of the gene seed is not, these organs don't grow. You have to put them in. So I assume they're just randomly opening the sarcophagus, cutting people open, shoving an organ in, and then closing it back up. Like an angry mechanic working on a car. Like, that's basically it's just a weird process. Surprise, surprise, a ton of them die while they're going through this. The one that's really messed up is a bunch of them will just wake up during the process and just start screaming in the sarcophagus, which I've read somewhere that they actually will mercy kill them sometimes, where they just open up and just shoot them in the head. But I couldn't find it in my research here. So that may have been something someone told me, and it might not be true. But those who don't die are filled with dreams of Sanguinius. They actually see him. They see his actions. They learn to love him. They take honor from, a lot of honor from his history. However, there's a downside to that. And we're going to get to it later. There's one more thing that they get to him. Yeah, we'll get to it in a little bit.
They also get a lot of they get the fuel for honor. They have very few corrupted Blood Angels.
Yeah, I actually did see someone. There was a debate someone was having on Reddit where they were discussing, are the Blood Angels the least corruptible chapter? And in lore, yeah, actually had definitely not the Dark Angels. In lore,
I'm just saying, the Sanguinius looks over them, basically. They have the guidance of him.
Anyway, so let's dive into it. Now we kind of explained it. So post-heresy, the Blood Angels are back on Baal. They're building up their chapter. It's going pretty well. And then they get a note in the mail from Gilliman telling him, hey, I've got a plan. And the plan is we break up all the legions into smaller legions so that nothing bad can ever happen again. And the Blood Angels they actually may accept this better than the Ultramarines do, if I'm being completely honest.
It's also pretty easy to do. They didn't have
any legions.
1,000 guys in the first place. They don't have a legion. But it's pretty easy to break up the legion. Hey, Ted, should you and I go our separate ways? Yeah. Okay.
Well, and that's actually what's so cool about this, because I look at this a couple different ways. I think, first off, I think that the Blood Angels agreed to the Codex Astartes, first off, because they're such a loyal legion. Second off, of all of the legions, they took the most brunt of the heresy. So I think they also have the deepest understanding of any legion as to why we should do something like this. But then the last one is also tactically, as we said, this 500 guys who survived, right? These are some of the best fighters in the entire Blood Angels. It actually makes more sense to separate them out because all of them are incredible leaders. If you take these, like, let's say you take 30 of the people who stood with Sanguinius on the Saturnian Gate and have them all share a legion, no, break them up. Let those guys can pass on incredible amount of knowledge.
Oh, you got to figure these are the best of the best that survived by just the pure, oh, I didn't die.
One interesting thing, though, about the split up is while they follow the Codex Astartes very, very well, and this is going to come up later, the Blood Angels didn't follow the Council of Nicae that strongly. Oh. They are very pro-librarian, which makes sense given that their Primarch was one of the most powerful psychers in the galaxy.
Nonchalantly.
Yeah, just was. Didn't matter. No one cared that he could fly. And so, but outside of that, I mean, they adhere to everything else, especially chaplains.
I want to throw this in with some of the Blood Angels librarians, though. I do think this is exciting because the Blood Angels librarians aren't just a support of theirs. A lot of their librarians' powers are direct hand-to-hand, boom. They get stronger.
We've never covered that. Most of the librarians, most of the psychers throughout all of the legions are their support. They're there to make the rest of the soldiers fight better. The Blood Angels librarians were some of the best fighters in the Legion as well. Did not want to be in hand-to-hand combat with the Blood Angels librarian. Cough, Mephiston. It does not go well. Although I will say I'd rather fight a Blood Angels librarian than a Blood Angel chaplain. Because you know, because chaplains and Blood Angels go deal like peanut butter and jelly, which for those of you not in America, I'm sorry. Because we can go butter and toast, but peanut butter is amazing, unless you're allergic to peanuts, in which case it's probably less amazing.
Still would taste good before you had your EpiPen.
Yeah, it is. Oof. Two things. One, for those of you who aren't in America, sorry, peanut butter is awesome. For those of you in America who don't realize we're the only ones with peanut butter, yes, spoiler alert, that's an American thing. Fluffernutter sandwiches. Ugh. Anyway. So let's talk about the Red Thirst and the Blood Rage, though, before we get too far into the Blood Angels.
This has also changed a lot in the lore over the years.
Yeah.
Because this was the overriding thing for a very long time. You had, early on in the game, you automatically lost X amount. You would roll. Mm-hmm. At the beginning of the game, you would roll for how many people became Death Company, people consumed with...
Yeah, and I liked the idea, but it made them kind of suck.
Yes, I'm just saying, but GW pushed that part of Blood Angels for a long time in the lore, and that was good 15 plus years of their
where you put your Blood Angels on the board and we're like, all right, let's see how many of them actually can do something.
But I'm saying the lore of the Blood Angels was the main thing, and we really got. We're going to talk about this, but this isn't the overriding what the Blood Angels are doing.
Yeah, so let's go into that. So after Sanguinius's death, the Blood Angels all are back on Baal, and they notice this massive change in the Legion. The first one is the Red Thirst. It'd always been there, but with Sanguinius around, it had been muted down pretty well. This is pretty normal. All of the Legions who had the more powerful their flaw, when their Primarch was around, it would go down. Yep. Magnus, as it went down, Lehman, it would go down. They would drive these flaws down. When the Primarch got further away from just in physical distance, they would come back. Their Primarch's dead. And so it really kicks up pretty hard. What makes this worse, though, is between the Red Thirst and the Black Rage, at the end of the Heresy and Sanguinius is dead, the Blood Angels have been rushing around the galaxy, fighting and fighting and fighting. We talked about it during the Space Marine episode, but one of the jobs of the Apothecary is to go to the dead Space Marines and pull the gene seeds out of them. They didn't have time to do that. So the Legion is actually, at this stage, facing extinction because they don't have enough gene seed to actually even take aspirins and grow them up. So they decide to do something. And what they do is, while they're bringing their dead Primarch back, they basically loot his body for gene seed.
Not cool, guys.
Yeah, kind of dick move of like, well, I guess we got to do this. What happens, though, with that, and they didn't realize it at the time, is this meant that all the new gene seed they pulled from Sanguinius carried his last genetic memory,
which was his death. His death at the hands of his best friend.
So everyone before this, the genetic memory didn't exist because it was taken from him while he was an infant inside a gestation tube. And now all the new ones are filled with his last memory of being stabbed through by his best friend. Oh, and all the other things like that occurred to them. This takes the flaw in the seed and cranks it up to an 11. So we'll start off with the Black Rage. So in the past, the Black Rage would only appear when you were in the height of combat and traditionally something bad happened to Sanguinius. Now you had aspirants coming out of the sarcophagus with full Black Rage. You've got it's just popping up constantly. And the most common place it pops up is when stress comes into play. So when a space marine...
Bigger and more dangerous the battle.
Yeah. And so what ends up happening is they're able to control it to a point. And the control they're able to have around it is if they can keep themselves calm. And yes, they stole this from the Hulk. Yes. If they can keep themselves calm, they're fine. But when their anxiety kicks up...
I love this
up,
ritual, though.
Oh, no, this ritual. What they do with it's awesome. I'm just saying, it's the Hulk. Anyways, what happens is, on the eve of a battle, they've all been taught to look for the signs of the Black Rage. So on the eve of a battle, if they feel that the Black Rage coming on, they will go over to their chaplain. They will tell their chaplain what's going on. And they're then escorted out of the room. And they're taken to a different area. And in that area, they are then, their armor is changed out to being an all black armor. And there's a last ceremonies happen for them because they are now going to be part of the Death Company.
And I love this though, because the chaplains are taught and instructed what to look for, how to care for these people, and also how to direct them.
Yep.
And they go through this, and it's a very somber ceremony. But it's also looked upon as a great honor to continue on.
This is how you are going to die with the most powerful version, which is the Black Rage, but killing our enemies. Because it doesn't take them over immediately. It's just they know tomorrow whenever the battle is. When the battle occurs, I am going to be overcome with rage. And I'm going to be an unstoppable killing machine. So they take them all and they put all, and it won't just be one person. They collect them all and they send them off to battle. And the chapter will actually correctly stand back a little bit while these guys do their fighting. Probably the better call. But they watch with honor as their battle brother slaughters an ungodly amount of enemies and then eventually succumbs to their wounds.
Well, also, if you don't succumb to your wounds...
Yeah, fun side note. If you don't succumb to your wounds, the chaplains of the Blandrels do come kill you. Specifically, Astaroth the Grim, which we'll cover later. Fun side note, the Black Rage also can affect Dreadnoughts.
I love these guys.
Death Company Dreadnoughts are so goddamn annoying on the tabletop, but they're awesome.
It's somebody affected by the Black Rage entombed in a Dreadnought.
Yeah.
And the thing is they do not put these guys down at first. They just unleash them when the time is right.
They just drop them out. And like they defrost them and just drop them to a battlefield. And you have a Dreadnought in full rage.
Going,
ooh, question for you. I've only ever seen them in traditional Dreadnought. Are there Redemptor versions?
No. Yeah. Or at least not.
Not yet.
Not yet.
Yeah. There will be. I just occurred to me, like, hey, wait a minute.
No, it's all in the old bodies.
Yeah, because I know with the giant claw, and like, I know what they look like, but it could make, wait, there's not a Redemptor version.
With blood talons?
Yeah, because the Black Rage does affect, spoiler, I don't mind getting there, the Black Rage affects Primaris and the Red Thirst. They both still affect Primaris. They thought it wouldn't, but it did. Needless to say, on the tabletop, if you're playing against someone and they have Death Company, shoot them. Especially with artillery.
Screw your stupid artillery.
They're just awesome. However,
is dumb.
It's great. Indirect fire and airplanes. People want us to play a game together, and that's what I would probably bring. I would bring airplanes and indirect fire. I would just
yell at you for 2 hours.
I'd lose the game to you, but I would annoy you with indirect fire and airplanes.
You did that recently.
That was only a little bit of indirect fire. Do you know how much I own? Like, open the closet.
You started the game with that. John and I played a game at a recent tournament. John looks at me and goes, "You'll probably win this game, but my goal is to annoy you as much as humanly possible." And well, he did.
I did. I did a very good job of making Brad just frustrated and borderline gun shy with his army because I was doing the, if you've never seen Always Sunny in Philadelphia with Wild Card, that was effectively my game plan. And it worked. I lost horribly, but it still worked.
When I ran away from Solar Mercator.
You retreated from a dune on a horse with Space Marines.
And 5 Cadians.
Yeah, those are Kriegsmen.
Kriegsmen,
yeah. Anyway, the Black Rage is only one part of their flaw. The other one is the Red Thirst. And the Red Thirst is a little bit annoying because it's been retconned a bit. Yeah, just a little bit. So in its current form, the Red Thirst is like a mini version of the Black Rage. While a Blood Angel is fighting and going, because whereas the Black Rage, you get a warning, the Red Thirst just happens suddenly, and they will lose control. And a lot of times what happens is they'll like abandon like a key position and they'll just run towards the enemy for a melee charge. That's how it is today. The Red Thirst used to be vampires. They would actually, they would have all these stories. So if you go to the early codexes, the Blood Angels would carry around vials of blood that they would consume to kind of to help quench their thirst. And if they didn't consume those vials of blood over time, they would actually begin to age and would get gray hair.
They had serfs that they just drank from.
Yeah, they'd bring serfs around with them and they would drink blood from their serfs. And I remembered this. But then I pulled up the 8th and 9th edition codexes. It's not in there at all. Then I found in the 7th edition codex, and I wanted to bring this up here because people have been playing the game for a while. I want to get called out for this. In the 7th edition codex, it states that on some distant worlds where Blood Angels had been stationed, some members of the local populace had gone missing, only to be found days later, drained of blood. Quote, "It's possible this was the work of cultists seeking to discredit the chapter." But at the same time, they still make references to people who were overtaken by the Red Thirst. And the rumors there is that when they're overtaken by the Red Thirst, they're imprisoned on the Tower of Amero on Baal, and they can be heard screaming their desire for human blood. What that would actually sound like, I don't know. Why the Space Marines can't build a soundproof prison, I also don't know. There's a lot of, like, I don't knows here, if I'm being candid. But anyway, I think GW realized that, like, the vampire thing's kind of lame, and they just had to kind of figure out a way to get rid of it, because it didn't really make a lot of sense. Vampire
Space Marines is awesome.
It doesn't make any sense. So we'll see what they do with it. But back to the Blood Angels. Before we kind of get too much further into them, one of the things I love about Blood Angels is they've got some pretty cool successor chapters.
And they have a shit ton of them.
Oh my God, there's so many of them. Yes. Like I would say none of them are as famous as Black Templar are, but next to the Black Templar, I think they have all the next most famous ones. Is there anyone else you can think of?
Crimson Fist.
They're more famous than?
No, I don't know. Crimson Fists are pretty famous because they're the first of that came out.
Yeah, they were. We'll go through. But anyway, close enough is my point.
We'll be right back after a quick break.
6 months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. If prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/talk. That's forhers.com/talk. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies based on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
The cool thing about these guys is that a couple of key people, they're all older. So Red Thurs is a big piece of them. So a lot of their stories, actually the stuff we were just discussing about how, well, the Red Thurs isn't really vampirism. It's actually just, you know, people getting caught up in combat. Not for these guys.
I do love, when I first read this, it cracked me up. Because John puts the note, he goes, these aren't nicknames given to whalers. They are the real official names of the successor chapters. And you do have to introduce yourself.
Yeah, you would arrive and hello, my name is John, and I'm a lieutenant of the Flesh Terrors, and I'm here to save you.
You're like,
I'm not comfortable with you being here. Who are you with? You're what Legion? Flesh Terrors. Is there a number?
Nope.
Just Flesh Terrors. That's what we're known for. Tearing flesh. Cool. So this one was actually founded by a guy named Nasir Amit. And the Flesh Terrors revel in the aftermath of Sanguinius's death. So all of these successor chapters, by the way, don't pull from Baal. They all go elsewhere, and they've got their own worlds they pull from. And the Flesh Terrors went to a death world and recruited from the absolute dregs of Imperial society.
Full psychos.
These people, so the Flesh Terrors, by the way, really cool paint scheme, really cool logo too. They're awesome. Big, big fan. Their idea was that they would just use violence and bloodlust is how they're going to control their black rage.
Why is that? That's the worst plan ever.
I don't know. The Flesh Terrors are cool as hell to me, though, because they're effectively the most violent version of the Blood Angels. They kill all of their enemies to a man, and people who like witness the savagery have like they just look away. Like, this is just horrifying about them.
And their chapter master has the Buster Sword.
Yeah. The funny thing about that, their whole plan of like, well, we'll just use violence to not succumb to the Black Rage. Yeah, the opposite happened. They actually succumbed to the Black Rage faster than so any faster. Other chapter, to the point where almost no member of their chapter is 200 years old. Whereas most of their chapters will get 400 or 500. They cannot make it. So they're effectively going extinct. The other piece about them, which is equally funny, is other legions refuse to be deployed with them, including the Space Wolves.
Yeah, when Space Wolves are like, dude, you have a problem.
Yeah.
You have a problem.
Yeah, yeah. And like the Space Wolves and the Flesh Terrors got into it because the Flesh Terrors and the Space Wolves got deployed somewhere into a hive, the hive world, because there were some heretics there, and this Flesh Terrors just declared that everyone here is a heretic and ran into the hive with their chain swords.
Yeah. And they're going to kill and we're going everybody. Door to door.
Yeah, all right. And the Space Wolves don't care much for the killing of innocents. So the two of them got in a full war around the hive about killing the hive. Cool thing about them, too, is they actually have a playable character. So if you want to play Flesh Terrors, if you like what I'm talking about, it's Gabriel Seth.
He's in a bunch of novels too.
Yeah.
His model's also cool. Again, he's got a anime comically sized sword, and it's fantastic.
Oh, I forgot about that. Yeah. The Flesh Terrors are cool as hell. But in case, you know, you're an Imperial citizen and you don't want to be saved by the Flesh Terrors, don't worry. Brad, the captain of the Blood Drinkers, is showing up next. Yep.
Hello, friends. Don't run away.
Don't worry. I'm here to help. What's the logo on your shoulder mean? Oh, it means I'm a captain in the Blood Drinkers.
Oh, again, one of the
is that a nickname? Well, I mean, sort of. We do drink blood, but outside of this, but it's also our nickname because we're not clever.
Again, another terrible plan.
Yeah, but they've actually got a really cool lore story as well, though. So their story is that much like the Flesh Terrors. Their initiates were succumbing to the Black Rage as soon as they came out of the sarcophagus. And so they were on the verge of extinction, at which point a single battle brother has a rando dream about going up a mountain to encounter a Sanguinius. And so he does that and goes up the mountain. And when he's up there, he encounters the angel that he believes is Sanguinius and tells him that all you have to do to stave off the effects.
All you have to do.
It's really easy. If you don't want to save your legion, is you just need to consistently drink the blood of all of your serfs. So he goes, cool. And he goes back to his chapter and tells them this idea of, why don't we just drink all the blood of our servants, and then we'll be okay, guys. And the people in charge went, sure, we'll do that. And it works. They go from the highest rate of blood rage to the lowest. Problem is, the only reason that worked is because it was actually not Sanguinius, but Kairos Fateweaver, the Lord of Change. And Kairos has set a trap that with this, because they're doing this ritual, he now can speak directly into the Legion and tempt them. And should so much as one member of the Legion succumb to Kairos's offer, the entire Legion would fall to chaos.
But they don't.
They haven't so far. Because, you know, the blood drinkers. Ooh, but there is one that does go a bridge too far. The Angels Vermilion. And we'll get to Dante later. But
Dante just say no.
Dante doesn't even accept the existence of the Angels Vermilion. And but he won't. So quick story on Dante. Dante is the current chapter master of the Blood Angels. All anyone knows is that there's these rando blood angels on the other side of the galaxy called the Angels Vermilion. And Dante tells everyone, you're not to speak to them, talk to them, interact with them, anything. And tells no one why. The reason why is because he knows that what they really do. And by the way, this is basically chaos.
100%.
Yeah. They have a ritual called the Sorrowing, which is a much nicer term than what it really is.
Because it's a reaping?
Yeah. In the Sorrowing, every 50 years, they gather up what is referred to as a non-significant portion of the population of their homeworld, Coronal. They then kill them all and drain their blood into a giant pool.
Where they jump in.
Which they all jump in and take a bath. And while taking a bath and doing a ritual, they then take what's called a sanguinary priest, which is an apothecary, and ritually sacrifice it. Then, in case that's not weird enough, they then, once that's all done, they drain all the blood out of the pool and put it into IVs that are inside of all their power armors, which is, needless to say, not in keeping with Codex Astartes.
I think we went a little off the rails here.
This is not written in there. This practice was a secret for thousands of years. They pulled this off for like 6,000 or 7,000, like more than that, probably 8,000 years. No one knows until there was this group of refugees who arrived on the planet, and the local space blood angels were like, oh yeah, we'll just use these guys. But a blood angel chaplain happened to be nearby when this happened, walked onto the planet and saw this entire thing happening, and did have a little WTF, dudes.
Like, dude, come on.
No, it actually came down to the point where him and the chapter master, the Angel Vermilion, came to blows, and only because of the chapter master's sanguinary guard, the chaplain didn't cut his damn head off. What's funny is that the chaplain then threatens to destroy the chapter. It says, the Angels Vermilion, I'm going home, I'm grabbing all the blood angels, and we're coming back and we're wrecking you. At which point, the chapter master of the Angels Vermilion said, if you do that, I'm going to tell the Inquisition about the Red Thirst and the Black Rage.
Which everyone already knows.
That's the best part. So they agree to, basically, they go agree to disagree and go their separate ways. But the funny thing is, at the same time, if you've read the lore well enough, you know, Gilliman, the Custodes, the Lion, the Lords of Terra, the Inquisition themselves, because there are people serving in the Death Watch, guys, they all know about this. But anyway, the Blood Angels just keep thinking that no one knows about their secret.
It's not a secret.
Yeah. So I will say, the Angels Vermilion, I didn't mention them for no reason. They're going to come up again later in kind of a cool, like, again, endless redemption arc. Those are just a few of my favorites, by the way. There are a ton of others. There are, I want to say it's like 25 or 30.
There's so many good
Blood Angels. And some of them have really good stuff. So
They're in a lot of stories too.
Yeah, and we're going to cover more of them as we get further into like the 40K lore cast in general, because we're going to later be talking about some of the main story elements of the game. And a lot of these Blood Angel successor chapters, they pop up there. So just a little bit, if you're listening to this cast and I didn't cover one of the ones you love, don't worry, they're probably going to come up in the future. You know what? Let's do a little bit before we get to, everyone knows where we're going to end. We're going to end on Ball, so it's fine. obviously. Before we get there, though, I do want to talk about some of the big Blood Angels. Dante, Lamartes, Mephiston, and Astaroth.
And Mephiston's got a three phase now.
Yeah. Mephiston.
He's been powering up several times.
Yeah. And there's a lot of others. Don't worry. Again, like Arkiro, Karlarn. Yeah. Moriar. Those guys are going to come up more later when we're doing other casts on talking about just some of the, like, especially when we talk about Psychic Awakening. Some of these guys are going to play massive. So let's start with Astaroth. As we said before, when a Blood Angel falls the Black Rage, if they survive, they're executed by the Blood Angels because they are a crazed murder machine, and it's probably a good thing to not have that just wandering around your camp.
Yeah, it's not really the best.
Yeah. Every Blood Angels chaplain, this is their job. But there's a very specific person who's the ultimate enforcer in this role, and that is Astaroth the Grim. Great name. Good model, too. Super cool model. The black 100%. Wings. Yeah, and the chopping axe. Astaroth's job is to travel around the galaxy wherever Blood Angels are engaged. And when I say Blood Angels, by the way, I don't just mean the original chapter. I mean all successor chapters. Yeah. Anytime anyone who's got Blood Angel gene seed in them is fighting, Astaroth may or may not show up. When he shows up, people aren't exactly comfortable because he's probably killed. I bet you he at this point has killed more Blood Angels than Cabanda.
Oh, 100%. He's been around for a while.
Yeah, he holds the record for most dead Blood Angels.
And the weird thing about this is they do it. They contradict themselves a little bit in the lore.
Yeah.
Because Astaroth does what he does to make everything go down, but he's also supposed to be keeping it on the DL because they don't want everybody to know about the Black Rage, but they already know about the Black Rage. And they make a point of saying,
yeah, everyone's aware of this. Everyone's aware of the death company.
Yeah.
I think it's more when they say he's keeping the DL, the way I interpreted that was that he's there to kill them before anyone realizes how serious the Black Rage is. That's how I because I think what happens, like if the Inquisition were to actually talk to someone and see someone in full Black Rage, they'd be like, oh, that's a demon. That's a demon. We have an issue here. But that was always my thing. What I like about Astaroth, though, is that in this job, it's not just to kill the guys on the battlefield. It's that once a battle's over, they do a quick head count. I'm like, all right, how many Death Company went down? How many Death Company bodies do we see? If any of them's missing, let's go figure out where this murder machine is before it wanders into like a kindergarten.
Yeah.
You know,
like, hey man, stop ruining the picnic.
Yeah. It's like, oh my God. So Astaroth actually does, he'll track down like a detective in an 80s movie, track down any missing Death Company and then murder them there.
Seems fun.
Yeah. Seems fun. Now that's him. Fun thing about the Black Rage, Lamartes.
Lamartes is awesome.
Lamartes is a chaplain within the Blood Angels, and he holds a key moment in the lore of the Blood Angels. He survived the Black Rage with Astaroth present, by the way. There was a battle against the orcs.
Astaroth was
ready for it, but I'm just saying, but he didn't, when I say survive, I don't mean he's successfully avoided Astaroth for 500 years. Yeah. You know, it's like, So they have a battle with the orcs the day before. He feels the Black Rage. He is a chaplain at this point, goes to the other chaplains, tells them what's going on. He's given his last rites, and he joins a death company. After the battle, they found him just kind of sitting down, hanging out. And like, oh, hey guys, what's up?
And no one has had this happen before.
They've never seen it before. So the apothecary is kind of given this weird look of like, all right. So they grab him and they bring him back to Astaroth. And Astaroth is sitting there with his axe in hand, like,
ready to hit.
Yeah, let's do this. And does the same moment of like, this is off. Like you're like he's having a conversation with him. It's like a field sobriety test is basically being done, and he's acing it, but he reeks of whiskey. And they're just getting and they're just confused. Like, how is this possible? So Astaroth decides, all right, I'm not killing you now. I'm going to put you in stasis, and I'm sending you back to Baal, where all the sanguinary priests are going to take a look at you. And that happens.
Well, Lamardius becomes a chaplain.
He was a chaplain.
No, I'm saying he rejoins in his role as a chaplain.
Yeah,
Screw that up.
It's funny. Because that's what happens.
He went back to his original purpose.
Yeah.
But he was actually better at it now.
Oh, he's way better now. He does two things now. What happens is two things come of this. First, he goes back to being normal. But second, he becomes a much bigger beacon within the Blood Angels, because this is only a few people who's ever successfully gone to the Black Rage and come back. Blood Angels don't want to die. You know, every Blood Angel now has hope that maybe the Black Rage won't be their end as well.
And I like it because in the game, he makes the Blood Angels more durable.
Mm-hmm.
And I really feel that's because those Blood Angels, even though they're succumbing to the Black Rage, still have that, I get through this.
We can admit it. The Blood Angels chaplains are the best chaplains in the game.
Oh, it's not even close.
Rules-wise, they've had the best rules. And even the new ones do. Like now they have their own flying chaplain.
Plus one to wound.
Yeah,
seems good.
Feel strong. Feel strong. All right. Funny story. Lamartes isn't the only major Blood Angel character to overcome the Black Rage. So is a guy who later comes to know as Mephiston, but starts off with Calistarius Lamartes,
who was a badass librarian.
Yeah.
Well, he still is, but
even more so. So just Lamartes is a was he originally Lamartes?
Hmm?
No. Oh, okay. Different. Okay.
It's Lamartes or whatever.
Fine. All right. So Calistarius is a very powerful psyker. During the Second War of Armageddon against the orcs, one night he feels the Black Rage overcoming him. So he does, again, reports to his chaplain. He's inducted into Death Company, and they go down there. While fighting down there, a building collapses on him.
The whole building. It wasn't like a little bit. He got buried.
Yeah, he got buried by a building.
He just dies.
Yeah, so he spends 7 days stuck under the rubble. And while he's sitting there, his mind is just racing with rage.
Oh, the whole time.
Yeah.
He can't do anything.
He's completely stuck and furious. And what happens is on the seventh day, because of course it's the seventh day, he gathers himself and he breaks free of the rubble. So two questions. One, does that mean every Death Company could have just hung out for a few days and they'd be back to normal?
I mean, kind of, if you do what Mephiston did.
And two, why did it take that long for him to pick up the rubble? Like, I like super ragey Space Marine who's full of nothing but hate and violence, can't move the rubble.
Oh, well, this
but
one.
Calm
this one
guy
makes,
can.
This one makes actual full sense.
They do.
Because he just uses his psychic powers to get out.
Yeah, that's what happens. So he cleans it up. What it turns out happened is that in his near death, his soul basically opened itself up to the Immaterium. And rather than be overcome by the Black Rage, he actually absorbed the Black Rage and became the Black Rage, which is why how he never actually overcomes it. He changes as a being.
He goes, completely. What's my secret? I'm always angry.
Exactly. What's funny about this to me is that he comes out of this exponentially more powerful in combat and as a librarian. His psychic powers are now like at a 22 out of 5. In combat,
Rex. Also, he's so terrifying. When he comes back to the Legion, he also physically has changed in appearance.
Yeah.
He doesn't show up and just go, hey guys, it's me.
Well, there's a lot of stories about that. When he was a regular librarian within the Legion, he was chummy. He'd talk to people. He'd hang out and stuff. The new version of him is quiet and somber. And we'll get more into this when we cover Psychic Awakening. But Mephiston later crosses the Rubicon Primaris. And in doing so, paves a way for his Legion to reduce the Black Rage. We'll get more into that.
And in the current stories, he has evolved even more so.
Yeah.
He basically met with the spirit of the Sanguinor.
Yep.
And he's powered up even more. I don't want to go into that. That's a full...
It's a lot. So that's why we're not diving too much into him. But I wanted to cover him. The goal here, guys, you have to figure out, is I want to cover all the people who have characters on the tabletop. So that's why I'm picking models of the tabletop, because I want people like, hey, who's this guy? Speaking of, he's big, he's shiny, he's Dante.
He's the oldest current regular Marine.
Yeah, well, he's the oldest Marine.
Not a problem.
He's the oldest Marine. He's the oldest Marine who's not in a dreadnought.
Yeah, I was saying, that's not in a dreadnought.
Yeah, he's the oldest Marine. So Dante was born in 447 of M40, and I love Dante. I love Dante's story.
We're going to get into this. All I can think in my head is he's constantly Danny Glovering it with the...
Yeah, I'm too old for this shit. That is Dante. That's exactly Dante.
Because he's so annoyed.
Yeah, he's 2,000 years old.
Yeah, which in constant combat.
Yeah, 2,000. Yeah, right. 2,000.
He's also been in charge for a long time.
2,000 shitty years. So Dante's kind of this cool character to me, because he was born in a crappy nomadic settlement on the ass end of Baal 2, but all of Baal 2 is the ass end. So anyway, at the time for the Great Assembly at Angel Fall, he goes for it. But to this point, no one from his settlement had ever successfully made it there because it was too far away. And Dante, though, is stubborn, so he just goes for it. And he's running, and he's passing, and yada, yada. Surprise, surprise, on a planet where there's no water or anything, he starts just succumbing to thirst. And he has his first, this is a key thing on Dante, him and the Sanguinar are very close. He has his first interaction with the Sanguinar, who just shows up and gives him water.
Holy Spirit's strong in him.
Dante drinks the water and takes off running some more. He gets to the trials. And the cool thing about this is that whenever they do stories in GW about someone at the trials, it's always, and then he bested everyone around him and everyone was amazed by him. Dante didn't. Dante just kind of survived. He didn't stand out. He wasn't in the top 10.
But he is cool as a cucumber.
Yeah, the whole time.
Nothing phases this. And it's still, to this day, it's pretty much
it
is,
like but that. But that's why I like Dante. He's not this super warrior. He's just a natural survivor. So he makes it through, and they bring him back to the main ball. He's entombed in a sarcophagus.
Which does not go well for him.
Yeah, the whole time. He stays unconscious, but he's screaming the whole time he's in the sarcophagus. And he's screaming out names. Primarch, obviously, Sanguinius, but also names of deceased blood angels who he's never met, including demons, all this stuff.
Big name demons. Yeah.
To the point where when they open the sarcophagus, each time they open, they to put in an organ or whatever they were doing them, they were like, oh, he's got to be dead. And nope, he's there. Then he comes out of the sarcophagus, and they just assumed that he'd be Red Thirst or Black Rage within a couple years. Nope, because Dante's just a survivor. Every single time anything comes up, he is calm, he is collected. In the engagements he goes into, Dante survives, and almost always his group around him survive. We'll get to one in a second. He is, the example I use for him is that he's got the undefeated record of a fighter, but no one likes watching him fight. That's what he does.
He's a grinder.
That's what he just grinds people out.
But the thing is I like the fact that he's the guy that everybody... I mean, hell, he got the chapter master position just because of the fact that everybody by default just kept asking him what to do, because in times of great trouble, Dante was just figure it out.
Yeah. And he's,
I guess we'll just do this.
Mm-hmm. Eventually he does get this chapter master, and that's when he takes on he gets rid of his red armor and he puts on the giant golden armor. That also includes a golden face mask on him. So no one actually knows what Dante looks like to this day, because they only ever see him in the armor. And that brings us to Dante's biggest challenge.
Ooh.
The devastation of Baal. We covered this
in the Tyranid Cast.
But we can do it again here from a different perspective. So end of M41, the galaxy is on fire. Abaddon's 13th Black Crusade, Abaddon is basically pushing in towards Cadia. The Destroyer Plague is ripping through the entire galaxy.
It's the pinnacle of Nurgle's...
Yep.
Nurgle's power in recent years.
Yeah.
For sure.
The Necron Tomb Worlds are awakening at a rate never seen before. They're all over the place. All right, the Tau at this point had tried to make a warp drive and actually weakened themselves. So the Tau were actually going the other direction at this point.
They lost an entire sphere.
Yeah, they lost an entire sphere and like a third of their army. So Tau, okay, Tau weren't doing great, but everything else was a problem. You've got cultist legions, but the biggest problem is High Fleet Leviathan has now re-entered the galaxy. And one of its main tendrils is on a collision course with Ball. And this is it, what's important about this is that Tyranid tendrils don't move quickly.
Well, they're
you can predict them. Yeah, you can predict the movement. Yeah.
They don't make any qualms about where they're going. Yeah. Tyranids harvest everything in this path.
And so all the astropaths, everyone tells Dante, hey, this is coming. And it's not a small tendril. It's all of it. So Dante puts out a call to every successor chapter saying Ball is in danger. You know, hell, where our Primarch is buried is in danger.
I think this is awesome.
Please help. And
everyone
comes, including going back to the ones earlier, the Angels Vermilion, who, and I love this story. It's a really great story. The Angels Vermilion show up and Dante goes, the hell are you doing here? Get the hell out of here. And the guys say, no, we actually ditched our chapter master who said not to come. And we're here to fight next to you.
Yeah.
Because that's more important to us than anything.
I just love it because he puts out the call. He lights the fires of Gondor.
Yeah.
And everyone. Yeah.
Over 30,000 Space Marines assemble. At the same time, every single resident of Ball Secundus, Ball 2, Ball 1, and like the 8 people on Ball all also agree to show up. And they arm the entire, civilization. But kind of like to Brad's point, the Lord of the Rings, it's not a, you're grossly overmatched.
Oh, it's
they didn't have close. A prayer here. So just give you an example of how overmatched. In orbit, the Blood Angels assemble their entire fleet. So 120 capital ships and some frigates. The Hive Fleet had close to 50,000 ships that were coming in. So orbit doesn't go well. I view this kind of the same way as Mass Effect 3. Where it's like, oh, yeah, we're going to, okay, and everything in orbit's dead.
Yeah.
We're going to hold it. Oh.
No, we
okay.
do not.
Okay. So that's over. Now it's time for Planetfall. And the Blood Angels and their successor, they built up a perfect defense. Layers of defenses, overlapping fields of fire. We're going to take the Tyranids down. And the Tyranids come right into the trap. And wave after wave after wave of Tyranids are crashing as the Blood Angels. But there's just not enough bullets or soldiers to hold these things back. Even the Sanguinor shows up and it can't turn the tide.
Remember, they just describe the sky as black.
Yeah.
Because it's
all Tyranids. And what happens is the Blood Angels accept this is it. We're going to die here, but we're going to die defending the tomb of our Primarch. And I mean, this book is awesome, by the way, and the story is great.
Devastation of Ball is badass. Highly recommend the audiobook. He does a great job.
Does he? What I like about this, though, is that this battle is coinciding at the exact same time that Abaddon's final assault of Cadia with the Will of Eternity is occurring. And the Will of Eternity takes a massive hit, and Abaddon loses control of it. He abandons it, and it just plummets into Cadia, plowing straight through Cadia, splitting it in half, and destroying Necron pylons. Whoa, whoa, whoa.
Yes, all of those things happen. One of those things is significantly more important than the others.
The pylon, you're right. The planet breaking isn't, but the pylons are gone.
Right. The pylons were a big deal.
As soon as this happens, a giant rift rips apart the galaxy, including, and because of where Ball is, it goes effectively right above Ball. Like, they can see it through the Tyranid horde.
The Eye of Terror becomes the, holy shit, you cut the sky in half, Eye of Terror.
And the most unlikely friend appears. Because while all this is happening with the Tyranids and Ball, Cabanda is sitting in the Immaterium, losing his effing mind. Because his entire...
I love no one's ever been as petty. As Cabanda is petty.
Cabanda is watching because he vowed he would destroy the Blood Angels. And he's watching someone else do it. And he's trapped in the Immaterium with no way to get there. Suddenly, the Immaterium opens in front of him. And while all these Blood Angels are fighting and accepting their death against the Tyranids, the sky rips open and screaming and wailing, the entirety of the, basically all of Korn's armies come rocketing out, to which the Bullet Angels, of course, say, well,
I guess we're super mega dead now.
Double deading. And instead, the Tyranid fleet gets attacked. And actually, I'm being facetious here. The Bullet Angels actually didn't realize how much this was happening, by the way, because the vast majority has happened on the other side of Baal, where there
it's
were...
It's happening.
It's happening on the moons. Yeah. It's happening in all these places, because the Bullet Angels have at this point been fought back to their last stand, you know, which is just at the arc. But they do see an awful bunch of a lot of bloodthirsters and what are the little guys called?
Bloodletters.
And bloodletters just murdering Tyranids.
I can't describe enough how many demons are showing up.
Trillions.
Because when the initial...
Beyond that, actually.
The initial creation of the Rift became a little more controlled, but the initial creation of the Rift was just... Go for it. Yeah. YOLO swaggins. Let's do this.
They all come out. And what I love about this is in not a long period of time, all of the Tyranids and the entirety of the hive tendril are gone, just dead. But Kabanda doesn't want to kill the Blood Angels in this way. He's only going to kill them when they're at their, he won't kill them. I think the line he uses, I'm not going to kill you at your weakest. I'm going to defeat you at your strongest to prove I'm better than you.
Yep.
So he then leaves. Not before, though, he takes all the Tyranid skulls that have from all the battles and goes to the moons and writes his name on the moon in Tyranid skulls to remind the Blood Angels of who saved them. And I'm coming back later to finish this.
Yeah, it was kind of a big deal.
It's awesome. So this ends, and it's called the Devastation of Baal. The Blood Angels now, for the second time in 10,000 years, are wrecked.
Riggedy wrecked.
There's like none of them left. Baal 1 is back to fully uninhabitable. Baal itself is the fortress, and like that's about it. And Baal 2, its biosphere is effectively collapsed.
Well, Secundus was almost, they were harvesting, in the middle of the battle, they were harvesting all biomatter.
Yeah.
On this,
yeah, there's not much left. So the Blood Angels are down to like at least 80% of, when I say the Legion, when I say Blood Angels, I mean, and successor chapters, they're down 80%+. Their main recruiting world is ruined. This chapter's about to collapse until everyone's favorite Primarch shows up, Gilliman, with Call, and shows up and walks up to Dante and says, hey, good news. Check out what I got in storage.
Primaris, baby.
Primaris Marines. And Dante, to his credit, just goes, yeah, I'll take him. Yeah. There's not a lot of...
He's just all right.
Yeah, yeah. Logan Grimnar had an issue with it. Yeah. Dante's like, yeah, it's this or we don't exist.
Shit's been going anymore. Down. I'm going to go ahead and say this is good.
Yeah, so Gilliman brings this mass of new soldiers. And yeah, the Blood Angels chapter are effectively saved. I will call out, this is why, in my opinion... people who've been playing Blood Angels for a while hate Primaris Marines more than anyone, because I know at least a dozen people who've been playing 40K for decades at this point with Blood Angels and then got effectively told in a codex that, oh, actually, your whole army should be Primaris now.
You shouldn't have any Firstborn because there aren't any more.
Yeah, they're all dead.
Yeah.
You have no idea how angry. Like, I know Blood Angels players who quit the game for a period of time, people who just curse GW's name over and over again because...
Hold on, though. To be fair, the Primaris-sized models make so much more sense in the size and scope of the game right now, though.
Yeah, I know, but
I get it. I get what they're
saying. You didn't collect. The issue is you had people who spent thousands upon thousands of dollars building up an army.
People got told,
like, hey, your army doesn't actually make sense on the board.
So if you're not somebody that hobos together their armies.
I mean, to be fair, GW also has never made the Baal Predator good.
I mean, I have used your models in 2024 more than I've used anything I have.
Yeah. That's because... One day you'll play artillery. You just need to get a big enough migraine, and then you'll realize, oh, this is just a convenient way to play. I can literally sit in a chair and play the game. One other thing, too, that's fun about this is during the devastation of Baal, going back to Grumpy Dante, Dante got slain by a Tyranid. I mean, he single-handed a Swarm Lord in combat.
See, he YOLO'd a Swarm Lord. Yeah.
But then he got stabbed, and he was lying on the battlefield dying after 2,000 years of service. And he looks up, and he sees Sanguinius and the Sanguinor above him. And he's just happy. He's like, I'm ready, Sanguinius. Take me. Take me with you. I have served my time.
He's so bummed.
And Sanguinius goes, nah, you got more to do, and resurrects him.
Which he's fairly pissed about.
Well, and because he doesn't just resurrect him, he resurrects him and gives him a new charge, saying that I'm resurrecting you because you're going to lead a charge that will save the Imperium from ruin. And Dante has to do, to your point, the I'm too old for this shit, sit up in the middle of the battlefield and go, fine. And he gets up, keeps fighting, by the way, and has gotten back all of his blood angels, and they're now gearing up for a fight that Dante doesn't even know what it's for, but he's just getting ready to fight on
of
whatever the Imperium needs. Yeah.
It's pretty awesome.
Dante's great. Dante is a fantastic character. So here we are, modern 40K. Ball itself is now a key staging ground for the Imperial forces because the rift is there.
Right there.
Yeah, I can see it. They're using it to fight the traitors. They're also pretty good fighting Tyranids at this point. And I think from there, we'll call it a break. And the reason why is to get more into the Blood Angels lore, it becomes less Blood Angel-centric and more kind of Imperium-centric, where they're a key part of something through Dark Imperium, Psychic Awakening, Leviathan.
We go to the Democlus Crusade.
Yeah, like it will still do more of them, but we're in the future, guys, going to be doing like 7-part casts going through stuff, and the Blood Angels will be like one of those parts because it'll be their person. So,
because there's a lot going on now.
Yeah, and I think this has been the goal here when we do these like chapter focused ones is to make it so people who play the Legion get something they enjoy, but it's actually more for people who don't play the Legion to really understand, oh, that's what the Blood Angels are. Maybe I do want to play them, or at least when I play them, I know why the hell this gold guy with curls is on the board. Like, what is a Sanguinor? Now you know. So from there, I think we'll call it. Next week, Brett doesn't even know this. I'm telling him now. Next week, we're going to do Harlequins.
Ah!
Yeah, there we go. I wanted to surprise him, make him super happy. So we're
about to backflip with my flip belt.
The amount of you not being able to do a backflip. There are people in Rascal Scooters who I would actually put more money on pulling off a backflip than you.
I'm gonna hurt myself forever.
You would put yourself in a Rascal Scooter trying to do a backflip.
Would I backflip into the Rascal Scooter?
It's just you'd land and someone just go, let's get in the Rascal if it's time. So until next week, where we start to have some real fun with a lot of energy, because Lord knows I love the Quins too. I've got them. They're one of my favorite lore armies. Just candidly, I love Harlequins and the Black Library so much. But until then, this has been John Barsotti and Brad Chester.
This guy.
See you next week.
Months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. If prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/talk. That's FORHERS.com/talk. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies based on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.